Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, in case you hadn't heard, the state's property insurance market is in big trouble. Florida homeowners are paying more, a lot more, for less coverage for their homes. Some insurers are pulling out of the state altogether, and they're leaving tens of thousands of canceled policies in their wake. Other companies, they've just gone out of business. Either way, it's leaving a lot of people in the lurch. Maybe you are one of those homeowners scrambling to get covered right now.
It is just remarkable, Melissa, and some of these increases in home insurance premiums are just eye-popping, 20% or more. Three Florida property insurers, Lighthouse Property Insurance, Avatar Property and Casualty Insurance Company, and St. John's Insurance Company, have all been declared insolvent just since February. Homeowners who've been dropped are now forced to go to the last resort, the state-run Citizens Property Insurance, backed by Florida taxpayers. So what's driving this crisis? Can state law get fixed? Laws be addressed? Are you struggling to get decent homeowners insurance just as the season approaches? Keep in mind, of course, that season starts June 1st. 305-995-1800. Homeowners, condominium owners, landlords, we want to hear from you. 305-995-1800. You can also share your experiences on Twitter. We're at Florida Roundup.
Your calls and tweets in a bit, and a little later, we'll welcome some insurance experts, too, with their take on the crisis. But first, the Florida legislature is about to kick off another special session in Tallahassee, and this one is focused on, you guessed it, the state's property insurance mess. Experts say if lawmakers don't step in soon, Florida homeowners could soon be paying more for their insurance than their actual mortgage payments. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Tom Fabrizio, state representative for District 103 in Broward and Miami-Dade counties. Fabrizio sits on the Insurance and Banking Committee, subcommittee in the Florida House. Representative Fabrizio, good to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on.
Can we begin by explaining what are the major factors causing this crisis?
So, yes, first off, yes, we are unequivocally in a crisis with regard to homeowners insurance. And as you mentioned very well in your opening, a big element that we're seeing, which is part of the crisis, is the amount of carriers that have gone insolvent, Avatar, St. John, Lighthouse. And recently, it didn't go insolvent, but insurance carrier FedNat entered into an agreement with the Office of Insurance Regulation and had to drop somewhere in the neighborhood of 60-some thousand policyholders. So we see policyholders going to Citizens. Citizens is beyond 800,000 policies at this point and rapidly increasing towards that 1 million policy mark, which is a danger because of, obviously, if the wind blows and there's a terrible loss, the state of Florida is liable for that, and there would be assessments across the board beyond the expenses for the Florida Insurance Guarantee Association, FIGA, which is a state of Florida agency that handles claims for insolvent insurance carriers. So there's a problem. Part of it, so the question is, why is it that these insurance carriers are going insolvent? One of the factors that we look at, and one of the things that we believe is the cause, is the sheer amount of litigation in Florida with regard to these first-party property claims. And to understand that a little bit, we look at the entire nation as a whole, and we look at all the insurance claims in the entire nation. And within the entire country, Florida has 8%. That's 8% of all the claims. And that's a reasonable number for one of the 50 states to have. However, that number really comes into perspective, and the problem, the crisis comes into perspective when you consider that we have close to, we have three quarters just a little bit under 80% of all the litigation in the country with regard to first party property claims is happening in Florida.
Wow.
So that's a lot of claims. We have over 100,000 active cases in litigation going through the Florida court system right now with regard to insurance. So it's a lot of litigation. So the next question that I imagine you'd ask is, what's causing all that litigation in Florida? Is it because Florida is different? Well, you know, the answer to the is Florida different is answered by the number of claims that we're seeing. You know, we have a reasonable number of claims. But what's really going on and driving this litigation? And, you know, Florida does have a one-way attorney's fee statute, which pays prevailing party fees to homeowners, policyholders, if they prevail in litigation against their insurance carrier. But also Florida courts have been applying a attorney fee multiplier, which further multiplies the number of fee, the amount of fees that's paid. So there are threats in most cases and most claims and cases that are filed against insurance carriers that the insurance carrier would have to pay two or maybe three times the attorney's fees if there is a prevailing case. And there are courts that are granting those. So that's a problem. I mean, there's certainly motivation for folks to file claims and litigation to ensue. And I spoke to, now it's been about 2 months ago since I spoke to Citizens CEO Barry Gilway, and we were talking about the amount of defense reserves, meaning the amount of money that Citizens has to hold back and reserve per claim in order to pay defense counsel. That's their insurance defense attorneys to defend cases. And his comparison of that defense reserve cost for a residual insurance carrier like Citizens in comparison to other residual insurance carriers throughout the country is that Citizens is paying you know, two or three times or holding two or three times in defense reserves. So a lot of what's going on, a lot of what's being held by these carriers is money needed to defend cases because the sheer amount of litigation.
The sheer amount of litigation. So if I may, since there are folks waiting on hold to speak to you, can I ask you quickly before we go to callers, you laid out in fine fashion, and thank you for explaining this so well, what a complex problem this is. So let me ask you then, Representative Fabrizio, what can the legislature do in a short session to get at some of these issues, get homeowners some relief?
So, and that's a great question. I want to start out by saying that I ardently believe, and I think most members of the legislature would likely agree with me when I say that an insurance policy is a contract between a homeowner and that insurance carrier. And that contract has certain requirements that the insurance carrier has to adhere to when there is a properly filed claim against that carrier. So if there is coverage for a loss, a carrier must pay that loss, pay that claim. And in situations where a carrier fails to cover a claim that is covered by that policy, that homeowner should always have the ability to seek recourse from the court system to enforce that contract. That's a breach of contract. So I ardently believe that that court recourse should be available. And I think what the problem is unfortunately, the fee multiplier has encouraged more claims and more litigation than what you see across the country. And additionally to that, I think part of the issue is, and there's unequivocally, there have been insurance carriers who have had improper claims practices. But if you look at this systemically across the board, the numbers apply throughout all insurance carriers at this point in the state of Florida, and we're seeing this heightened amount of litigation.
Right, so I'm just wondering, here, what can you do legislatively to change?
So there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things. The number one thing I think needs to happen is because, as you mentioned in your opening, the hurricane season starts on June 1, and that June 1 hurricane start date is very important for many different reasons. And it's also a date, one of the two dates when insurance carriers that are members of the admitted market in Florida have to disclose and have to file their reinsurance contracts to show that they have sufficient reinsurance to handle the claims if they come forth. So one of the things that we need to do is I think we need to do some catastrophe fund expansion to be able to allow insurance carriers that are on the verge of going insolvent to stay solvent. And my view would be that that CAT fund expansion that we do should have a couple of characteristics. One, it should be optional for carriers who need it to be able to avail themselves of it. And number two, it should be temporary. It should be 12 to 24 months, because I don't believe the state of Florida should get in the business of augmenting the reinsurance markets. So that's one thing that we can do to stop the hemorrhaging and stop the carriers that are going insolvent at the rate that they've been going. The number two thing that I think we need to do, and this week the governor was here in South Florida and he mentioned at a press conference that there will be likely some tort reform going forward. One thing that I believe can be done to limit that sheer amount of litigation that we've been seeing is make some legislative changes to limit the use of the attorney fee multiplier. That the attorney fee multiplier should only be applied in rare and exceptional circumstances. And the court's discretion as it's been applying it should be limited to some degree.
Representative, stick with us. We want to take some phone calls here. Representative Tom Fabrizio is with us, a Republican member of the Florida House of Representatives, member of the House and the House Banking and Insurance Subcommittee, as he and his fellow lawmakers will be back in session on Monday to try to tackle the home insurance market here in the Sunshine State. 305-995-1800 to share your experiences. 305-995-1800. Also hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what your home property insurance experience has been like at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Let's begin in Orlando, where Kelly has been very patient. Go ahead, Kelly. You're on the radio.
Hi. My husband and I, we actually have two properties, our primary residence and our rental, which were under St. John's Insurance when they went insolvent on March 1st. With our primary residence, with some of the confusion with it going insolvent and I guess the slide insurance company that was taking it over, there was a gap and our bank ended up taking out an $11,000 insurance policy on our behalf when the policy we had was only about $2,000. And we've been having to sort through trying to get rid of that, very expensive policy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, it's been sorted out, and we're good with our primary. But the issue we have with our rental property is that the roof on it is 17 years old, and we've been told that they are going to drop coverage if we don't replace the roof. So we have been trying to get a roofing contractor, and with all of the supply shortages and the concerns, we're not sure if we're going to have a new roof replaced in time before we end up losing the insurance completely by the end of this year. And that's another that's going to force a lot more people even onto the citizens insurance if there's not something that is done to help with that stopgap.
Yeah, Kelly, you put your finger on really one of the significant issues here, and it is the age and the condition of roofs in Florida. Representative Fabrizio, I know this has been an issue that you and your fellow lawmakers have tried to tackle in the past regarding kind of marketing campaigns around roofing contractors. Some of that got thrown out of court as a First Amendment violation. Any appetite to deal with the age of roofs and how insurance companies are dealing with it and the experience that Kelly in Orlando is trying to tackle right now?
Kelly's issue is something that a lot of folks are experiencing. And I had a constituent call me recently who is a elderly person, over 65. I don't like to say elderly.
Okay, yeah.
And this person is on a fixed income. There is a mortgage on the person's home, and the insurance carrier for this individual changed their underwriting guidelines to require that roofs be no older than 15 years for renewal. This person has a 27-year-old roof that she considers to be serviceable, but clearly, in order to get coverage with that carrier, they would need to have that roof replaced. This individual doesn't have the money to replace a roof, is on a fixed income, will likely be forced placed because they'll be dropped by their carrier and their mortgage lender will force place coverage like Kelly's primary home had. Now there would be an escrow shortage and a higher mortgage payment and a potential foreclosure if this person can't be able to meet those payments. So it's a major problem. And I imagine that this is something that's occurring throughout the state. So this is an issue that does need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the roof issue, Tom, like you mentioned, we've seen stem from a lot of inappropriate roof solicitation where some of the roof claims are legitimate, but there's a vast majority that tend to not be legitimate, unfortunately, for a lot of different reasons, or they're late notice claims that are way beyond the date when they should be covered. Some of those elements, like you mentioned, that were part of Senate Bill 76, which we passed in 2021, have been struck down or held up by the courts in different ways. So I believe that there is an appetite to address that issue. I believe that there's an appetite to make some clarifications that could help address the late notice portions of the claim. But it is a problem and it needs to be resolved.
We're getting emails about this. Mark in Mayport emails the Florida Roundup. We should be able to set up escrow accounts for roof replacement with our insurance companies. 305-995-1800, Eric in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Eric.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
So litigating these cases for clients throughout Florida, I've seen time and again that insurance companies are quick to use their enormous budgets, their almost endless resources to litigate even obviously viable and legitimate claims because homeowners don't have that kind of money. The fee multiplier is the only tool in the legislative arsenal to level the playing field. Unlike a car accident case where your life usually can go on, people don't have anywhere to live while these cases are pending. And without the fee multiplier, I'm just afraid of the enormous increase in the number of people this hurricane season and every hurricane season thereafter who are going to be left at the whim of an insurance company that wants to increase their bottom line and not do what's right for homeowners. I think this legislation is a huge mistake.
All right, Representative Fabrizio, we hear there from an attorney. Your response.
Sure. And listen, I started out by mentioning how I do believe that legitimate claims, we do have the 627 attorney fee statute, which I don't think is going to be changed. But the fee multiplier issue, we saw several years ago when the fee multiplier issue started being applied, that litigation increased by about 400%. The fee multiplier, I believe, should be applied in rare and exceptional cases. I don't believe the reason for a fee multiplier is in order to be able to find attorneys who are very specialized in a very specific area that are unavailable for the community at large otherwise. There is case law that talks about how it should be applied in rare and exceptional cases, and it shouldn't be the norm. So I do believe that we need a fee multiplier for the rare and exceptional cases that require a high degree of specialization. But I wonder in South Florida where that fee multiplier is applied. I don't believe that there is a shortage of plaintiff's attorneys who are availing themselves of the court system and handling these cases. There's thousands and thousands of these cases. So, and there are, I love my brethren on the other side of the bar, but I don't see a shortage of attorneys.
Well, State Representative Fabrizio, we'll have to leave it there. We will be following you in special session. Give us a call as we talk about the property insurance mess here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
In Miami, I'm Tom Hudson. We're talking about the ever-escalating costs to insure homes and condominiums in Florida. Some insurance companies canceling policies, limiting coverage, raising premiums by double digits. Other insurance companies are leaving Florida altogether or have collapsed, leaving property owners scrambling for coverage just as storm season is about to officially begin. Share your stories and experiences, questions with us, 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. We're on Twitter as well. Look for our handle, @FloridaRoundup. Mark Freelander is with us now, Director of Corporate Communications with the Insurance Information Institute. All right, Mark, how do you diagnose this problem? One-way attorney's fees, escalators, reinsurance costs, roofing exclusions. Diagnose the problem that Florida homeowner property insurance is in.
Florida's property insurance market is collapsing. That's the best way we could describe it. It is a mess beyond proportions. Just in the last 90 days, we've had three insurers go insolvent. A fourth company just announced they're canceling more than 68,000 policies midterm, a very unusual move that was allowed by the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation. And they're doing this because in order to survive, they need to reduce their risk. So they're canceling 68,000 policies and keeping 83,000. This is FedNat Insurance Group, right, out of South Florida. At this point, most homeowners have no options of where to turn to get insurance coverage. We heard from a homeowner recently who said they got a new roof. They've never had a claim on their home, so they have no risk factors from that perspective, yet they still can't get coverage.
The risk factor, Mark, is that they're a homeowner in Florida.
Well, exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's where we're at now, where the only option is either Citizens, the Florida insurer of last resort, or what's called a surplus lines carrier, which is an out-of-state insurer, not regulated by the state of Florida, could charge much higher rates than a Florida insurer could, and also may not offer the same level of protection for you and your family that a Florida insurer could. So it's a big problem.
You have got a dire diagnosis that the Florida home property insurance market is collapsing. So Florida state lawmakers will be back at work in Tallahassee on Monday. What would you like lawmakers to consider to reform the insurance market to stop the collapse and then to rebuild it?
Well, first of all, Florida lawmakers need to agree on what needs to be fixed. Here we are Friday afternoon, and there's been no bill proposed yet. We've just been told in the last half hour, the leaders of the House and the Senate have not agreed on terms of a package. We were expecting to see the package 48 hours ago, then 24 hours ago, then this morning, there's nothing there. So until the leaders of the Florida House and the Florida Senate can agree on a package, we've got even a bigger problem on our hands, because what are you going to resolve if you can't agree on anything?
So try to help prioritize here. We were just talking to Representative Fabrizio, you know, he identified litigation risks, right? The enormous exponential increase in home insurance litigation over the past few years, raising the risk and lowering the risk tolerance for home insurance companies. One-way attorney's fees escalator. We've heard from insurance companies about the higher cost of insurance for themselves, the so-called reinsurance market. We've seen insurance companies point to roofing exclusions. That's the latest kind of version between sinkholes and then assignment of benefits, and now it's roofing. So what's the prioritization? If you had to put your pen on, this is the thing that lawmakers need to come out of next week with something, what is it?
Well, two key areas. One is stop the roof fraud schemes, which is an action that the CFO, Jimmy Patronis, is already taking with his investigative unit. He made a major announcement about this with plans to beef up that unit last week. That's a good start. And stop the runaway litigation and the one-way attorney fees. This has been addressed in previous legislative sessions. It's never made it to the finish line in terms of a strong bill to stop these one-way multipliers, as you call them. For example, you could have a $40,000 claim and it goes to court and the attorney walks away with $700,000 or more in fees. The $40,000 goes to the homeowner. That's all they get. The $700,000 plus goes to the trial attorney. This is completely out of control, and it doesn't happen in any other state. And it's because of a state Supreme Court ruling in 2017, which allows this to basically be applied in virtually every type of property claim lawsuit. Doesn't happen anywhere else.
305-995-1800. Are you having trouble getting insurance for your home, condo? Here's a tweet. My homeowners went up $900 from the last year. I had to find another company, and it was very difficult. I've only been in my house for 2 years, they say. Well, Lynn Hatter, news director at WFSU in Tallahassee, has been listening in and joins us now with some thoughts. Hey, Lynn.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you know a lot about this, too. In fact, you've been following the historic problems with property insurance in Florida over time. How long has the state had issues with this?
Oh, this goes back almost 20 years. You first started seeing the emergence of it following Hurricane Andrew in 1992, but it really was not until the 2004-2005 hurricane season where the crisis emerged. And for those of us who were here in 2004-2005, you might remember Francis, Charlie, Ivan, crisscrossing the state, pretty much hitting every single major metro and really eviscerating our property insurance market. Shortly after that storm season, you saw a lot of the big insurance companies flee. And that began sort of the growth of Citizens, the state-backed insurer of last resort. Citizens had at one point about 1.3 million policies. And that was the beginning, really, of the crisis that we see today.
Mm-hmm. And we heard Mark Friedlander just now with the Insurance Information Institute say the market is actually collapsing. It's as serious as it can get, according to the experts. You're there in Tallahassee. The lawmakers are going to go back for a short session. What can they realistically do in that short special session to try to deal with this massive problem?
Well, as Mr. Friedlander said, they have nothing. This is longstanding. One of the big issues has been this concern over fraud. And it's interesting to know that the fraud keeps changing, sort of as Tom pointed out. At first, there was a lot of concern starting in 2011, which is when the five-year timeframe for policies expired. You saw a lot of people in 2011 claiming storm damage from 2004-2005. That was the first issue. Then in 2011, you saw a rise in sinkhole claims, and the legislature tried to limit those sinkhole claims, which caused a whole other problem because people with legitimate issues like bad foundations couldn't get those fixed. And then you saw the emergence of the assignment of benefits issue. And that's where a homeowner will sign over those rights to a contractor, let the contractor negotiate with the insurer. We tried to do some changes around that in 2019 because that was sort of the fraud piece of the bubble then. Didn't quite work out, and now we're on to roofs. And so the issue keeps changing every couple of years, but underlying it is this issue of Florida is quickly becoming uninsurable. And that is what a lot of the insurance companies are looking at. And that's what's really concerning to Citizens, because there are so many people on it. And what a lot of people don't realize is that if Citizens runs out of money, if the Citizens Reinsurance Program runs out of money, then the rest of us have to pay. And we are paying for people on Citizens through surcharges on things like your auto policy. So even if you don't have Citizens for home insurance, but say you have Geico, like I do, you're going to be paying for those costs. And so it is not just a burden for the people who are on Citizens, it really is a risk for everyone else. And the legislature cannot seem to reach an agreement because a lot of the things that we've tried in the past have come back to sort of bite us in the butt. And so it's a cycle.
Yeah, it's like whack-a-mole. It's like whack-a-mole
cycle. Yeah, exactly. I've
heard it described as the fraud bubble. It really is a game of whack-a-mole. But when you scrape all of the fraud concerns and everything else away, Florida is a long-term risk. You know, insurers don't just look at 30 years from now. They're looking at 100 years from now. And there are a lot of different things that are pulling into those concerns from insurers of whether they're going to have enough money to pay for Florida.
Lynn, stick with us. Lynn Hatter with WFSU in Tallahassee. Mark Friedlander is still with us as well with the Insurance Information Institute. We want to hear your stories about home insurance, condominium insurance, 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Let's hear a few of these stories here from across the peninsula in the panhandle. Julian Plantation, you're up. Go ahead, Julie. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to share a story that I have about a water leak and filing a claim with my insurance company. And just a brief history, I used to have insurance through State Farm, and after decades, they dumped me. So I started looking again, and due to the age of my house, my only options were Citizens or St. John's. I signed with St. John's and paid premiums for several years, and then in July of 2016, had a pinhole leak in a water pipe. Went down through the walls underneath travertine flooring, notified them, ended up, my deductible, I believe, was about $2,500. They sent out some water and mold remediation people who didn't dry the house out. So I hired someone else, and when they came out, they looked around the whole house and found that I had a second leak, which was my garbage disposal had corroded on the back side. And I bring this up because what ensued then was I was liable now for a second deductible. So I had to pay another $2,500. And the insurance company's maximum amount they had to pay didn't increase a penny. So that was one issue. Then with St. John's, they did send out their adjuster who looked around, and their initial offer was less than $15,000 to repair my house. I knew that was not anywhere in the ballpark, and a friend of mine mentioned a public adjuster, which I was completely unfamiliar with, but ended up hiring one. And I will say that I certainly ended up with more money than I would have without them, but that was also not a perfect system.
Yeah.
Then I received a letter from St. John saying that my flooring might not be covered because I had continuous travertine flooring, which was obviously going to be a big expense. Public adjuster hired that, or I'm sorry, took care of all that. Then I, because of the water and mold, I had to move out of my house into an apartment. And despite sending in receipts for months, which were approaching $30,000, St. John's wouldn't release any payment on my temporary living costs. So I was forced to hire an attorney. We did eventually settle, but it took 2.5 years. And the $15,000, we ended up settling for over $250,000, to put this in context. So I don't know what the answer is to the litigation, but when insurance companies are trying to lowball like that, I'm not a bit surprised at any of it.
Julie, go ahead.
Well, the nature of my leak, I ended up not having water, and I've only recently been able to get the most of the renovation done. I haven't been able to get insurance even if I wanted it for over 5 years.
Yeah. Julie, I appreciate you sharing what a heck of a journey you have experienced there with home insurance here in Florida. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Brian, want to hear from you. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the radio.
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a similar story in which we were forced to hire an attorney to recover anything at all from a water damage claim that occurred when our shower pan failed in an upstairs bathroom and leaked into the kitchen, causing about $35,000 worth of damage. Even though the bathroom had been renovated only 2 years prior, the insurer, Frontline Insurance, claimed that it was a maintenance issue, that we had improperly maintained the grout, and they refused to pay the claim. And again, we would not have recovered anything if we did not hire an attorney on a contingency. And at the end, you know, the insurer just claimed appraisal, which is another controversial state law, which precludes us from engaging in further litigation. So we weren't able to recover any of our attorney's fees. So on a $35,000 claim, we only walked away with about $9,000, had to refinance our house to cover the rest of the damage. So it's really kind of hard to provoke any sort of empathy for the insurance agency here in Florida, which I think is unburdened by a moral compass at all. I mean, it was a complete disaster. It took 11 months of litigation to recover any damage at all. And then now we're faced with a threat of non-renewal because we only have, like the other caller stated, very hard to get insured now because we had a claim. Even though the damage has been repaired, we can either go with Citizens, which is going to force us to get an entirely new roof because our roof is, you know, 11 years old, or we can renew with Frontline again, and they are telling us they want us to replumb the entire house, even though their own adjusters didn't find any issue with the plumbing did not cause the leak. So it's just sort of a retaliatory reprisal to punish be insured from filing a claim.
Brian, so I really appreciate you sharing that story with us there from New Smyrna Beach. Thanks for calling.
Lots of people tweeting the show about their horror stories, too. Let's close with Mark Friedlander of the Insurance Information Institute. Mark, in the short time we have left before the break, do you think people will eventually start throwing up their hands, leave the state if they can't insure their house?
Well, first of all, it's unfortunate, the two stories that were just shared with us, but that's not the issue we're talking about. We're not talking about individual claims where somebody has a dispute with their insurer. We're talking about fraud, out and out fraud, where roofers are scamming homeowners and they're working with unscrupulous attorneys to file lawsuits by the thousands and collecting hundreds of thousands in fees from insurance companies. That's the problem here. And that's what needs to be addressed by the legislature.
And do you think they can get at the problem in the short session? You don't sound too confident.
To be honest, I don't have a lot of confidence, but they need to start taking at least first steps to get towards stability. No matter what comes out of Tallahassee next week, it's not going to fix everything. We are realistic about that, but they at least need to have a starting point.
Thank you for that. And thanks for your expertise, Mark Friedlander, Insurance Information Institute, and Lynn Hatter, covering this issue for a long time and well at WFSU in Tallahassee. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And as if that weren't enough of a headache, guess what? More wildfires are expected to be plaguing Florida in the coming years, too. That conversation's coming up in a minute here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public broadcasting in your community. In Miami, I'm Tom Hudson.
And in Jacksonville, I'm Melissa Ross. Well, Florida is a state surrounded by water, and usually we worry about the effects of flooding and sea level rise here, driven by climate change. But a new report says wildfires are also a growing cause for concern.
Yeah, research from the First Street Foundation released on Monday suggests that as climate change warms the planet, the risk of wildfires here in the Sunshine State could double by the year 2050. So wildfires, a new risk, perhaps a growing risk for South Florida homeowners. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800 to join our conversation, or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Dr. Jeremy Porter is with us now, Chief Research Officer for the First Street Foundation, the group behind this research. Dr. Porter, welcome to Florida Public Radio. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wildfires can happen here in Florida. They can happen in the forests, in the Panhandle. We see them here in South Florida, in the sawgrass of the Everglades, for instance. How significant is the risk today, and how is that expected to change?
Yeah, the risk is actually much higher than what many people probably think from a national perspective. I know there are people in Florida that live with wildfire, know the wildfire exists. We talked earlier, or you mentioned earlier, the Panhandle of Florida recently in Bay County. The Everglades are often also have fires, but it's something that people live with, and I think that people don't actually understand or don't appreciate the wildfire risks that exist in the state of Florida or throughout the country from a national perspective.
So how's that expected to change with climate change? What does your research lead you to predict?
We're finding that on average, wildfire risk across the country is going to about double. And that experience is the same in Florida. Places that have risk, it's only going to get worse. Places that don't have risk, we're going to end up seeing larger extents of wildfire risk, new properties coming at risk.
Yeah, so where is the risk going to be growing? Where is it currently, and where is it growing in Florida?
It's predominantly is in sort of central Florida around Polk County, the Orlando area. We see a lot of risk currently relative to the rest of the state. The growing risk is predominantly in the Panhandle area.
And climate change is the contributing factor, but how is climate change contributing to the higher risk of wildfire here in Florida?
Yeah, in our models in particular, we hold development constant. So all of the increase that we find is due to climate change. And there are a couple components specifically. One is the decreasing humidity. One is the increasing temperature. And one is changing precipitation patterns.
Hmm. Let's go to Alex Harris now. She covers climate change for the Miami Herald. Hey, Alex.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. You've been writing about this in the Herald. For example, when Hurricane Michael tore through the state in 2018, it took down 3 million acres of felled trees. That provided fuel for the wildfires that went through later, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was the Chipola Complex fire, and it led to tons of evacuations, destroyed 2 homes, and more than 30,000 acres of forest. But luckily, no one was killed or injured.
That's good. Now, let's talk a little bit, if we could, about how Florida's rapid pace of development might be a contributing factor. What does your research show there?
So one of the interesting things I learned from Dr. Porter and the First Street Foundation when I was writing this story is the reason Florida is number 3 in the nation for increased fire risk under climate change, under their model, is because precisely what you mentioned. So we have so much development. We have so many smaller parcels because everything's been broken up that we have physically more pieces of land at risk compared to places in the West where maybe you have thousands of acres that count as one parcel. So when we are subdividing this land and putting more and more people on smaller pieces of property, we're putting more people at risk.
It seems counterintuitive, right? I mean, we think of the West as being the place where this is a problem, but the way our built environment is set up here is causing problems.
Yeah, it's ironic when we're a state known for hurricanes and for floods, but this research really shows that wildfire risk is something real and we should be preparing for it in the future.
And let's talk about that. What can we do both as individuals and then what can our government do to mitigate this risk? Because it is a real risk, according to the research we're hearing from First Street Foundation about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I spoke with Brian Williams for this piece. He's a meteorologist with the Florida Forest Service. And I mean, he agreed, first of all, that these findings make sense to him. He says it fits in with what he's watching. But we talked a little bit and he said that he thinks Florida actually has pretty good resources and defenses to keep an eye on forest fires and other wildfires. And of course, I think anyone who lives in areas that are at risk, particularly people in Collier County over on the West Coast or along the Everglades, should really keep a close eye on evacuation orders and be really tuned in with what their local emergency managers have to say.
That's good advice all the time, but especially as the planet keeps heating up, we are talking about a new study showing an increased risk of wildfires in Florida. In fact, the risk is expected to double by the year 2050. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
305-995-1800 to join our conversation. Dr. Jeremy Porter, Chief Research Officer for the First Street Foundation, still with us. Dr. Porter, are there lessons that Florida ought to be thinking about or putting in place now, considering the relatively lower risk of wildfires here compared to states out west that have had a historic wildfire problem and challenge in how they've addressed it versus what tools perhaps Floridians have?
Yeah, one of the things we found in our research was actually that a lot of states in the Southeast, including Florida, do a good job of fire suppression and sort of clearing out fuel so that fires don't grow to the size that they have in the West. I think one of the bigger issues really is that there's not a national level property scale model that existed. This is really the first time this has been produced. It gives individual property owners and communities the ability to both understand risk, but then also to allocate resources to mitigate against that risk.
In terms of the emergency response, how prepared is Florida? Florida firefighters, right? Would be the first responders and are the first responders to these wildfires.
Yeah. In general, I mean, having this type of information available allows emergency responders the ability to understand, you know, where these types of events are likely to occur in lots of areas around Florida. And I know we mentioned the Everglades a few times. The Everglades burn in controlled burns, but right, they oftentimes are protected against neighborhoods so that they don't come into contact with homes.
Yeah. How at risk is property in Florida to this forecast about a doubling of the wildfire risk in Florida by the middle of the century?
Well, that doubling is going to make fires more intense. And when you have more intense fires, what you're really going to see grow are ember zones and areas in which embers from these fires can then come into contact with homes. So personal, you know, property owners have to do things like clear defensible space around their homes or make sure their eaves are covered so that the embers aren't sucked into the attics. of the home. But it you know, it's not that the wildfire itself will come into contact with the property, but the growing risk will also increase the likelihood of coming into contact with embers.
Now, you have a tool people can use online to let users check the fire risk at their address, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've created a fire factor tool and coupled it with our flood factor tool on riskfactor.com.
So just type in your address, check the flood risk, check the fire risk, see if you're in a zone where you might not want to be. That's important to check out, Tom. Everyone in Florida should be doing that.
Yeah, and Alex, I'm wondering, as you've covered climate change for a good number of years, how is this kind of forecast, this kind of prediction greeted in the advocacy community, in the community of climate change scientists, adapters, and chief resilience officers, that kind of population?
Well, to be frank, I think the reaction is always, oh, God, something else to worry about.
Right.
Climate change really affects our state in so many ways. It's really, I mean, fire is just the newest one we're talking about right now, but flooding, stronger storms, effects on the property market, our insurance market, like you guys just spent this segment talking about. There's so many different ways that climate change is affecting us. And I think that when government leaders and NGOs and other advocacy groups all see this, they think, okay, this just sort of adds to the urgency. That this state really needs to have a more comprehensive method of addressing the risks of climate change that we all face.
Yeah, Dr. Porter, what would you like to come out of this in terms of the regulatory and advocacy and legislative response? Here in Florida, it's been the response that's there has been focused on sea level rise and flooding particularly.
Yeah, at the First Tree Foundation, our mission is really to quantify and communicate climate risk in a way that's easy to understand, easy to digest. We want people to be able to take this information, to go on riskfactor.com, understand their community risk, understand their property risk, and then use it in a way that best allows them to arm themselves with information and mitigate against that risk. So that can happen at the property level, that can happen at the community level, but having that information is the most important sort of point from our perspective.
Well, interesting research, concerning research, certainly, to look at here in Florida, and really shining a light on a risk that Floridians know exists, but how that risk grows because of climate change is really fascinating. Concerning all at the same time, Dr. Jeremy Porter, Chief Research Officer for the First Street Foundation, behind this forecast for the expected doubling of the risk of wildfires in Florida by the middle of this century. Alex Harris wrote about that report. She covers climate change for the Miami Herald in South Florida. Alex and Dr. Porter, thanks so much for spending your time with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the show, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Our producers are Heather Schatz, Natu Twe, and Catherine Hobbs.
Our technical director is Richard Ives. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Peter Meritz answers the phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Levos at aaronlevos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Make it a great weekend. We'll be back next Friday.